While we're waiting, you look at your outline, you think, huh, is this a test? There's not much written on it. Because I'm going to do some, every time I do some of these things, I'm just going to do it a little differently every time. And it's just going to kind of be an overview. Chapter 1, 2, 3, 5, and 6. And we're going to go through it. And I want you to be thinking about the providence of God. And I want you to be thinking about characteristics of Daniel that we can emulate. All right, so turn to Daniel if you're not already there. I think there's only one other reference I have outside of Daniel, so you'll be able to stay right there. I was told to teach on Daniel and the providence of God. I was given no resources, so this is fun. But I started listening to it. One nice thing about the paper route, there's very few nice things about a paper route, but there one nice thing about a paper route is you get to listen to stuff. And so I just listened to Daniel. And I was amazed at what an incredible man of integrity he was. You know, we have a lot of great examples in the Bible of Peter and Abraham, but they all had pretty major glitches along the way. Daniel was just an incredible guy. So, all right, let's find out about Daniel. Now we're going to go read through these scriptures, and I'm going to point out some obvious providence points of the life of Daniel, or just the life of the book of Daniel, where there's obviously things that lead to the providence of God. But we're also going to look and see how Daniel lived and to see if there's anything we can apply to our lives as 21st century women. All right, chapter 1 starts out with Nebuchadnezzar came to Jerusalem, and he basically took over the city. And the people plundered the house of God. And this is going to come up in chapter 5 again. But they took the stuff, the gold and the silver, out of the temple and just kind of stored it for themselves. Which you would think that's probably a big no-no, and it was. Verse 3 then says, then the king, Nebuchadnezzar, we get introduced to Daniel here, ordered this guy, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel. So he's bringing in some sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of his nobles, youths in whom there was no defect. I think that's interesting. That's the first thing that was required, that they look good, that they didn't have any issues, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had the ability for serving in the king's court. So this is what he's looking for. Nebuchadnezzar wants to find some Jews, and he wants to get the good ones. He wants to get the good-looking ones. He wants to get the guys that are smart in every branch of wisdom. Wow. I mean, what a qualification. And these are young men. So that's how Daniel started out. Pretty talented to begin with. And he ordered them, continuing on, to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter in king's personal service. Now, among them were the sons of Judah, were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So these four men were chosen, providence of God. Right off the bat, we see the providence of God. And they were randomly appointed, randomly chosen. Well, that's what we think, but God chose them to be there. And they were discerning, and they got their 3 years of education. So they were taught a new language, and they read books, and they ate well, and they were educated 3 years. And then they were ready to serve the king personally. But the king then changed the guy's four names. Daniel's name was changed to Belteshazzar. Now, why do you think the king would change their names? You can just blurt it out if you think you know. He wanted them to completely separate from what they grew up with. I mean, that's what our educational system sometimes does, too. They don't want us to remember anything from our past. They wanted to separate them even from their names, from their Jewish culture. He wanted nothing, wanted them nothing to think about anything but that. And you know what? The guys let them do that. Wonder why the guys let them do that. They were educated, and it seems like they didn't care that their names were changed. But Daniel spoke up when it came to the food. So why did he care about that? Well, he cared about it because it specifically broke God's law at that time. Changing the name didn't break God's law. He said, that's fine, but this is something I have to stand for. Verse 8, Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food, with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. So he didn't want to eat any food that wasn't prepared according to the law or eat forbidden meat. The education and the name change didn't break the law, but that did. So the key verses of probably this whole first chapter are those, that first sentence in verse 8. What did Daniel do? Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile. And that's what we need to do. If you want to pick out characteristics, we have to decide in this ever-changing world and ever-changing United States that we have to make up our mind that we are not going to break God's law, which in our day and age is we're going to believe the Bible and we're going to obey the Bible. We have to make up our mind. Daniel was, before anything we read in the book of Daniel, decided to obey God in whatever he was about to do. It says that he made up his mind, and there's no doubt that he was going to be unwaveringly obeying God. But you look at the next verse, and that dedication to be unwavering seemed to bless him. Verse 9 says, now God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials, the guy that was in charge. So the story continues to verse 16, that Daniel told the overseer to let them eat vegetables and water for 10 days. And after 10 days, it says they were fatter, and that just means they were healthier. Now, in my opinion, if you ate vegetables for 10 days straight, I would not feel very energetic. Let's just put it that way. This was a providence of God. There's no question that they should not have been healthier. They should not have been fatter. They should have been looking worse. But it was the providence of God that they... So whenever you see those, I don't know if they're still out there, but there's Daniel's diet plans. You know, because Daniel did it this way. This was the providence of God. God allowed them to stay healthy and look good so they could actually eat and not break God's law. So he found compassion, and after 10 days it said they were fatter, healthier than those who were eating the king's best food. So the overseer let them continue eating what was allowed under the law. Daniel made up his mind that he wasn't going to defile him, and God granted him the ability to do that. And another sign of providence is that they did look healthier. Verse 17 is really eye-opening to me. As for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. If that isn't a providential statement, I don't know what is. God gave them. God gave them the knowledge. They may have studied. They may have had intelligence. But every time we try to take credit for something that God gave us, we need to realize God gave it to us. Verse 19. The king talked with them, and out of them all, not one was found like Daniel and the other three guys. So they entered the king's personal service. And it even says farther on down that there was none like Daniel and his three friends. They had so much wisdom and understanding that it's described as they were 10 times better than all the magicians in the king's court. So the guard, God really blessed them and granted them that wisdom. So what we take from this first chapter is Daniel's godly characteristics is that he made up his mind that he was going to obey God's law right off the bat. he was going to do that. So in this chapter, I'm going to ask you every time we get done with a chapter, what is our responsibility as believers in Jesus Christ?
To obey.
Obey God's law. What is God's responsibility? Everything else. That's what I put. All the details of life that we want to get in, and I got to look really good in front of the king. I've got to, he takes care of it. What are you responsible for? Just obeying what the Lord says. All the details of our lives, all the details of Daniel's life, he took care of. That's what we need to be confident with. Okay, Daniel 2. Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and I get to a point when in this lesson where I just put Nebi. I don't want to say, I'm not into four syllable names, so Nebuchadnezzar. Oh, it's five. So I may say just Nebi, that means Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, he had dreams, and he had magicians and sorcerers to tell the king his dreams, and they stood before him, and it was obvious this dream troubled him. Because right off the bat, Nebi said, if you don't interpret this dream right, you will be torn limb to limb, and I will burn your house down. And that means he will kill his family, their families. He also promised to reward greatly the one who interpreted right. So these wise men got wise. Well, just tell us the dream. Just tell us the dream and we'll interpret it. He said, nope, not this time. You tell me what the dream is. So he knew that they wouldn't be faking. Verse 12 says, because of this, the king became indignant because nobody could interpret it, and very furious, and gave orders to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. Providence can be negative. This is the providence of God. The king decided all of my wise men will be killed, and that included Daniel and his three friends. Daniel was a wise man too, and that means he was going to get killed also. And Daniel talked to the bodyguard and requested to talk to the king and requested time enough so he could take a chance and pray about it with his friends. Verse 17. Then Daniel went to his house and informed his friends, his three friends, about the matter so that they might request compassion from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his friends would not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men in Babylon. And it would be a mystery. You know, they got selected, they went through all this training, and now they're going to get killed. Is that your will, Lord? So Daniel went home and told his three friends, and they prayed to God that they would not be destroyed. And, you know, we can pray about things like that. We can pray for our safety. We just have to be willing to accept God's answer, whatever it is. Then David went to sleep. You know, what if you know that someone was going to kill you? Would you just go to sleep? Probably not. We have to worry about that a little bit, don't we? That's the sensible thing to do, is to, you know, we need to be, no, he went to sleep. How do we know he went to sleep? He had a dream. That's how we know he went to sleep. God answered David's prayer of wanting to be able to interpret the dream in a night vision that next night. Verse 19. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. So Daniel went to the king's man, Arioch, and said, stop the presses, don't kill anyone. I can interpret the dream. And interpret the dream he did in great detail about what he dreamed about and what the statue that he saw and what it might mean concerning future kingdoms. Well, this impressed Nebi so much that he actually fell on his face and honored Daniel and gave him some gifts. But Daniel didn't forget his friends. He asked for positions in the administration of the Babylon for while they were there in the king's court. So applications of chapter 2, providential things. And I want you guys, we're going to have time during the discussion group. I want you to write down things that you see here that are extremely providential that I'm not commenting on, that you really think are kind of neat. Applications in chapter 2. Verse 14, Daniel used great discretion and went directly to the source of his trouble. I think there's some insight here. Verse 14 says, then Daniel replied with discretion and discernment to Arioch, the captain of the king's bodyguard, who had gone forth to slay the wise men. He went directly to the source and said, can I have a word with you? He used discretion, and he went to the source. When we have an issue with someone, what do we usually do? We have a tendency to talk, and we want a little bit of sympathy. Nobody's trying to kill me, so somebody's trying to kill him. He went directly to the source and said, let's figure this out. We do that. You're right. We ask for other people for support, and then when all else fails, we pray about it. But he went to the source. So if there's an issue, go to the source. This discernment led him to request to talk to the king, but he wanted a little time so he could pray about the revelation of the dream with his friends. Next point in verse 17, when threatened with his life, Daniel went to seek out godly friends to pray about the situation. There's another application. Then Daniel went to his house and informed his friends about the matter, so that they might request compassion from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his friends would not be destroyed. When there's an issue, when there's a tough issue, grab the godliest friends you know and pray about it. Let them be in on it. And I think of Esther with that too. She had her handmaids. They fasted for 3 days before she went into the king's court. Get some godly friends and pray about it. There's nothing better than when you pray with godly friends. Nothing makes you closer friends than when you grow in the Lord and share your concerns, and then they can rejoice also in your victories, or they can be a great support if things don't go the best. Pick out great godly friends. It's amazing when you have some friends you can call upon and pray with you over a situation in your life. Verse 19, when God answered Daniel's prayer, he immediately went into the prayer of thanksgiving. Verse 19 says, then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. He just praised the Lord. If I would have been Daniel, it would have read, then the mystery was revealed to Chris in a night vision, and she sprinted to the king and told him. He took time, and he thanked the Lord. Everything, every answer we get from God, the spirit of thankfulness in our heart. I've said this before from up here, but when you are thankful for things, your attitude changes on a lot of things. And it's the proper attitude to be thankful what the Lord has done in your life, and you just even every little day things. How many times do I take time to offer up a prayer of thanksgiving when God answers my prayer, whether it's positive or negative? It's an answer to prayer. The Lord loves a thankful heart. Turn to Luke 11. This is the only other, I was reminded of this when I was reading this. Luke 11, starting at 11, and this is Christ. While he was on his way to Jerusalem, he was passing between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 leprous men who stood at a distance met him, and they raised their voices, saying, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. When he saw them, he said to them, go and show yourself to the priests. And as they were going, they were cleansed. Now one of them, when he saw that he had been healed, turned back, glorifying God with a loud voice. And he fell on his face at his feet, giving thanks to him. And he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus answered and said, were there not 10 cleansed? But the 9, where are they? Was no one found who returned to give glory to God except this foreigner? And he said to him, stand up and go. Your faith has made you well. And that very last sentence doesn't mean that faith has made him well physically. He understood that he needed to give thanks to the Lord, and it made him well spiritually. In what I've read on that, he became a believer at that time. So it's important to Jesus that we take the time to thank him for things he has done in our lives. And it does keep our minds thinking properly. Back to Daniel. Daniel 2:49. Daniel was a loyal friend. 49 says, and Daniel made request of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the administration of the province of Babylon while Daniel was in the king's court. He asked that his friends could have a job and be a part of the administration while he was in the king's court. So, analysis of Daniel 2. What's our responsibility? Obey God. What's God's responsibility? Oh, you're getting it now. All right, chapter 3. This chapter has nothing to do with Daniel, but boy, it's full of providence. Daniel had just gotten Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego these jobs, and they were in trouble already. They did not bow down to the golden image. And they got ratted on to Nebi, and he got really mad. Verse 13 says, the three men were brought before the king and told that they had to bow down. And they said, nah, their response is so good, we have to read it. Chapter 3, verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. Oh my goodness, that's gutsy. But that's determining in your mind that I'm going to obey God, deciding beforehand, nothing's going to make me waver. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire. Could put a period there, but he didn't. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. What an incredible statement of faith. That no matter what comes into our life and no matter what the outcome of what we pray for, we are going to obey God. And this made, Nebi had some anger issues because he decided to, well, we're just going to set this flame afire 7 times hotter. And he did. They tied up the 3 faithful men, fully clothed. I mean, the detail on this is really cool because they were fully clothed and he threw them and they threw them into the furnace. The guys that threw them into the furnace died. It was so hot. And the furnace was so hot that they didn't come out alive. Then Nebi looked up and he said, hey, there's 4 guys in there. And they aren't tied up anymore. What's going on? The 3 faithful men didn't burn. And this is, when we think about the providence of God, here's a lot. The three faithful men didn't burn, were untied. Maybe it was the pre-incarnate Christ, but there was definitely an angel of the Lord in there walking around with them in the furnace. They came out and no hair or clothing was burnt. And it didn't even smell like smoke. I really like that detail. Didn't even smell like smoke. The king was so impressed with the 3 men that he made a decree saying that no one can mess with them or their God from now on, and he has allowed the 3 men to prosper in the country. He gave them a higher position. He gave them a promotion after that. So application. In that very section that we read, we must make up our mind, no matter the outcome, that we will not serve or worship any other God. So what's our responsibility? Obey God. And God's responsibility? Everything else. And the rest. Chapter 4 is Daniel interpreting a dream, but we're going to run over to chapter 5. Belshazzar is the son of Nebuchadnezzar, and he decided to have a party for his nobles and his wives and his concubines. So he said, you know, when my dad conquered Jerusalem, this was in chapter 1, verse 1 through 3, he got some silver cups out of their temple and some gold cups. Why don't we use those for the party? So they decided to use those for the party, and they praised the god of, and I don't know how you do this, silver and gold maybe, but they praised the god of wood, bronze, iron, and stone. I mean, they praised the god of that. Probably not a good idea. Then in verse 5, suddenly the fingers of a man Man's hand emerged and began writing opposite the lampstand, the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, and the king saw the back of the hand that did the writing. If that isn't providence, I can't imagine what that looked like. But it was time for God to invade the party. And this mighty king had a really brave reaction. Verse 6. Then the king's face grew pale, and his thoughts alarmed him, and his hip joints went slack, and his knees began knocking together. He was scared to death. And I'm guessing he should have been. And I'm guessing everyone was scared. But the queen came in and said, "Hey, your father appointed this guy chief of magicians in his court. Maybe we can get him and find out and see what he says." And that was Daniel. Daniel was still a part of this court. He is known for interpreting dreams. So they get Daniel and this big and mighty king, and this king offered him purple and gold necklace, and even offered him to be the third ruler in the kingdom. And then verse 17, it says, "Then Daniel answered and said before the king, 'Keep your gifts for yourself, or give your rewards to someone else. However, I will read the inscription to the king and make the interpretation known. Then Daniel reminded him of the rise and fall of his dad and made the point in the story about his dad, that this is also going to happen to his son. Verse 21 says, "He was also driven away from mankind, and his heart was made like that of beasts, and his dwelling place was that of wild donkeys. He was given grass to eat like cattle." He's talking about his dad. "And his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he recognized that the God, Most High God, is ruler over the realm of mankind and that he sets over it whomever he wishes." That's how serious that is. We need to realize that it is serious that we know that God is in control of our lives. And we need to realize that his providence, no matter where that control leads us, is best. Verse 23 says, "But you have exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven, and they brought the vessels of this house before you, and you and your nobles, your wives and your concubines, have been drinking wine from them, and you have praised God of silver and gold and bronze and iron and wood and stone, which you do not see, hear, or understand, but the God in whose hand you are life breath, are your life breath, and all your ways you have not glorified." So basically he told them, same thing's going to happen to you. It's a pretty big deal, because in verse 30 it says, "That same night Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldean king, was slain." He got killed that night. Doesn't say any details on how he got killed. And then Darius took over. And then the last chapter, Daniel's reputation remained. Throughout this whole chapter, the reason I went through that is Daniel's reputation continued year after year after year. And we get to chapter 6. I have a note in my Bible that Daniel was 65 in verses 1 through 3. And by the time we get to the lion's den, he was close to 80 years old. I did not realize that. And this was the third generation of kings. We're up to Darius now. So he was an old man. And we'll quickly go through this. And once again, Daniel's integrity through all this is incredible. Chapter 6, verse 3 says, "Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king plan to appoint him over the entire kingdom." He continued to grow in his wisdom. He continued to grow in his dedication to the Lord, and the Lord blessed him. And he's 80 years old. His integrity continues to be recognized. But, of course, with this comes jealousy. Verse 4, "Then the commissioners and satraps began to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs. They could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption inasmuch as he was faithful, and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him." Wow. Can people say that about me? Can people say that about you? I mean, his integrity, they tried and they looked and they couldn't find anything. The only thing they knew that they can condemn him with is his love for worshiping God. And they knew he wouldn't budge on that. So they set up a law that said everyone must bow down to the king and no other god should be before him or we're going to throw you in the lion's den. Well, Daniel continued bowing down before God 3 times a day, and the satraps told Darius that he knew he was going to have to be throwing Daniel in the lion's den, and it really made him sad. His reputation with Darius was great, too. Verse 14 says, then as soon as the king heard the statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. He was trying to think of ways that he could do this. Daniel's reputation made him have peace even with unbelievers. Romans 12:18 says, if possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. So the king had to obey the law. And 16 through 24 we may look at in discussion group. But it just talks about the sovereignty of God and how it worked in the king's heart through this whole story of Daniel in the lion's den. I've always often wondered, we see pictures of it going off into the cave, but I do believe it was a pit because it does say right before lunch that when they cast the children in verse 24, wives into the lion's den, they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. So that's just crazy. Lessons from Daniel. Daniel 6 here. When you have integrity, lots of people want to bring you down. That's just going to happen. But also, in verse 14, when you have integrity, some unbelievers may respect you and become believers. That the both can happen. There's going to be people that are going to tear you down, but you just never know that your testimony for that quiet person that isn't making an opinion might be the testimony they need to say, what does she have that I don't have? Verse 16, when you are bold with your testimony by your words and your deeds, others are watching. People are watching you, good or positive. And then verse 24, sometimes God will inflict vengeance soon. And he inflicted vengeance soon, as soon as Daniel got out of that lion's den. The people that made that rotten rule and their wives got thrown into the lion's den. So we'll talk during discussion group of a little more carefully, but I just was very encouraged by Daniel's integrity, and we learn that our responsibility in life is to obey God. And how do we obey God? We find that information in the book that's sitting in front of you. What's God responsible for? Everything else. And we have to rely on that. My only responsibility when things are going tough, when your children are rebellious, when you don't know what to do concerning an aging parent, I just have to obey God. And sometimes, and we'll talk about that too, sometimes why I can't get an answer out of the Bible for this. We'll talk about that. So, all right, I'll pray. Lord, thank you for empowering this young man and his 3 friends to be just full of wisdom. And it says very specifically that you gave them knowledge and discernment. Lord, I just pray that we will desire more than anything knowledge and discernment in the way we live our lives. I thank you that you have given us the written word that we can know what it means to obey you. If you love me, we will keep your commandments. And I pray that we will show that our love for you through our commandments that you have given us to obey. I just thank you that you've made it simple for us, and I pray that we will trust that you will take care of everything else, even if it's not exactly what we want, but you know what is perfect for me and my growth, and that's the bottom line. Thank you for Daniel. It'll be great to meet him someday, and I just pray that we will live our lives to glorify you and to encourage others. In the precious name, amen.